Welcome to Phenomena Podcast. Unlock your investment potential.
All right, let's get started. Welcome, everybody. It's time to rev up our engines and go. I'm glad to see everybody here. And tonight, I'm going to go through a little bit about the different strategies. So welcome, everybody. And feel free, as we go through tonight's presentation, to leave a question in the comments section, and I'll do my best to try to answer every question that comes in. My goodness, there should be a lot of questions given what a difficult time it is in the markets. So Tirunat says, good evening, Cop. Good to see you and good to see everybody. Make sure you ask questions. Now is the time to start to ask your questions, get them into the chat, and then I'll start answering them as we go through the presentation. So again, good to see you. Tirunat, thank you so much. It's 7 p.m. here in beautiful Bangkok, Thailand. The weather's been amazing, right? It's winter time. It's beautiful. It's stunning. All right, let's kick this off, and I am going to talk today about the all-weather strategies. And remember, ask your questions in the chat and I'll answer them at the end or maybe in the middle sometimes. So we're looking at October 2022 to try to wrap up what happened and understand where our positioning is. So world stocks rebounded, commodities too, bonds were flat, gold was down slightly. The performance review of our strategies, all-weather inflation guard, was up 2.2%. All-weather strategy was up 0.8%, and all-weather alpha focus was up 2.9%. So inflation guard did really well in this particular period. So we're going to talk then about the global outlook that guides our asset allocation. So let's look at a little bit of a review about what's been happening in the markets. Here we can see the performance of the world stock markets. The U.S. rebounded, but not the tech-heavy NASDAQ, which was flat over the past month. China saw continued falls, and we can see that also in Hong Kong. This data is up to date as of the 7th, so as of yesterday. And the European market index has been rebounding. You know, when you look at Europe and you look at what they're facing, it's kind of amazing that it's rebounding. Remember, you can download this. Just go to valuationmasterclass.com and go to the resources section and you can take a look at this information. All right, so let's look at some charts. Here we have the red line is stocks. The blue line is bonds. The green line is commodities and the yellow line is gold. So what we can see is that world stocks have taken a hit in 2022, but gained 5.9% in October. We can see that gain. Let me grab my pen here. Hold on. We can see that gain right in that uptick. So in 2021, world stocks were up 19%. Year to date, 2022, they're down about 20.8%. The market recovered on expectations that central banks would pivot at some point. Now, the Thai market, money market stayed flat, and you can see that here. Rather than global bonds in AWS and all weather alpha focus were allocated to the Thai money market, which was flat as expected. The main purpose of our money market allocation is downside protection. Now, commodities were up 3.1% in October. We can see that uptick in the green line right there. That little uptick showed some strength in commodities. They've been on a bull run since April of 2020. And WTI oil rebounded slightly and closed October at $87 per barrel. And I think this is an important thing, is that we had this huge push to a very high peak of about almost 120. Then we came back down to this bottom, and now we're starting to bounce off that bottom. I suspect that we're going to go higher a bit when it comes to oil. Now, energy sector was the best performer, or energy in general, followed by livestock within the commodities index, right? These are the five areas that the commodity index do that. So OPEC plus reduced production quotas, which supported the oil price, and livestock saw a strong rebound as well. Let's look at gold, which has fallen in 2022, down by 2.3% in October. Gold closed the month at $1,633 per ounce, and the relief rally in stocks led to the underperformance of this safe haven asset like gold. So remember to keep asking your questions in the chat as I go through this. I see that Utana has asked a question about Vietnam and China. I'll come back to that as we get through the presentation, but keep the questions coming. Now, much of the recent weakness in gold is actually US dollar strength. Think of gold price as kind of a currency pair. Typically, a stronger dollar means a lower gold price in US dollars. This also means that gold performance differs in other currencies. Here we can see some different currencies relative to gold. If that currency is stronger, like we can see, for instance, the year to date, let's say the 1 month, US dollar 1.6. So US dollar strengthened relative to gold, euro strengthened relative to gold, and sterling, the pound sterling, strengthened the most relative to gold. So in October, only Japanese yen and Chinese yuan could buy less gold. And other currencies strengthen versus gold. Now, just to keep in mind, why is it strengthening, particularly in the US and the UK? Well, because 3 month rates in the US have been put up by 4%. Now they're at about 4.1%. And in the UK, they're at about 2.7, which is up about 2.6. So interest rates have gone from zero to a very high level in both of these countries. And that's part of what's bringing strength to their currencies. Now, corporate bonds have had an exceptionally bad year. This chart is pretty remarkable. It shows that US investment grade performance, the worst since 1989. It has been a very tough period for bonds. Now, the UK long-term government bonds have suffered a massive loss year to date. And the UK central bank basically stepped in to try to revive the government bond market. And rate hikes typically lead to declines in housing prices. This is an interesting chart that basically shows that the number of months since the first rate rise. So here on the x-axis, we can see 12 months all the way up to 48 months. And what we can see is that we're at about 7 months right here. And here's where we are. But that could mean that we still have a long way to go to get down to this point, which could get down to that point maybe somewhere in the next 6 to 12 months. Now, the global financial system is built on the US dollar, and that's why it has gotten stronger. So what we can see in this is that the international role of the dollar, well, when it comes to foreign exchange transactions, it's almost 85% or so, almost 90. When it comes to other areas, it's a little bit less. But generally, what we can see is that it's used in pretty much every area. So US dollar counts for 40% or more of much of the global financial transactions. Now, the euro has weakened significantly against the dollar. The US is just increasing the interest rate so fast that it's causing strength in the dollar. And the weak euro has led to a massive drop in German trade balance that we can see basically falling through the floor. Now, all of us probably saw this video of Hu Jintao being shuffled out of the committee meeting, the Communist Party National Congress, with Xi Jinping sitting there. It was a kind of a horrifying video when I first watched it. It's difficult to say. I've seen commentary about this coming from lots of different angles, so it is a little bit difficult to say exactly what happened. But there's no doubt, I would say, in that Xi Jinping is in a very, very strong position. Here's Eric Townsend from Macro Voices. His podcast is excellent. And OPEC Plus has reduced the production quota, which is likely to reduce global oil supply. So he's an expert on oil, and he's thinking that oil prices still have a ways to go. And I would generally say I agree with that. Now, Biden wants to put an extra tax on energy producers, disincentivizing investments. Biden's new U.S. Drilling Reduction Act is going to send some oil prices flying in 2023. You know, the Biden administration is in for a very difficult time. In fact, it's probably a good place to stop for a minute and talk a little bit about the U.S. election. U.S. voters are voting right now, and it is Tuesday, November 8th, which is election day in America. So people are waking up and they're starting to cast their votes throughout the day. And so what I expect in the election coming up is that the Republicans are going to get a dominant position in the House of Representatives, and they're going to have a small majority in the Senate. That's my prediction that I've been talking about for a while. And the result of that is they're going to have, Republicans are going to have the ability to do the, to control the committees, to investigate people like they want to investigate Fauci, as an example, to try to push the energy producers to give them incentives. But remember, in America, even if the opposing party, the Republicans, control the House and the Senate, they still need the president's signature to make something into law. Now, if you've watched how Biden's cognitive position is, he may just sign something without even knowing it, but I'm sure his staffers won't let that get in front of him. But the point that I would make is that just because Republicans took over doesn't mean that they can get everything they want. They still got to get through the president. The president is probably going to veto almost everything that Republicans bring. So what we'll have, I would argue, is probably a lame duck period for 2 years where U.S. politicians aren't really getting a lot done. And then eventually, I would suspect we'll see a Republican president come in, either Trump or DeSantis. And I suspect that in the end, DeSantis will probably win out. And then after that, what I would say is that then the Republicans can really take control. But for right now, actually lame duck sessions where the House and the Senate don't really pass anything is actually not that bad of a thing, because basically when government's not doing a lot, it usually means that the economy is safer. All right, let's go back into the presentation here and look at it a little bit more about where we're at. So central banks have been loading up on gold. This is Jesse Felder, who's talking about almost 400 tons of gold were scooped up by central banks in the third quarter, more than quadruple the amount a year earlier. And we can see that increase right here. The blue bar is third quarter. And so already third quarter surpassed all those prior periods that's in this chart. And it's the highest going back all the way to 1976. And we haven't even gotten fourth quarter in there. If fourth quarter range is somewhere between very low and very high, we're probably talking about the amount of gold that central banks are buying will be up at about that point. So this is pretty significant. All right, so what are the key takeaways? Bonds are still having a terrible year. U.S. dollar remains super strong and continues as a reserve currency. Its strength is making it hard for countries to cope. Xi Jinping has consolidated power, and structural supply deficit is likely to support commodities. And finally, central banks have been loading up on gold. Now, of course, I've asked that you share your questions. I see some excellent questions coming in from Utana has already put in some questions. Yalsaran has put in some questions. Anucha has put in some questions. I will get to those questions towards the end of the session. So now let's review some strategy. So the first thing I want to do is look at the all-weather inflation guard. This is our lower risk strategy, which was up 2.2%. And with this strategy, we make no changes, but equity is about 30% and bonds are about 60%. And also notice that we've put money into Thai medium-term bonds, so not into U.S. bonds right now. And we put them into TIPS bonds, which are inflation-adjusted or inflation-protected. So we're not exposed to as much of the fall in the bond market there. Now, up to up 2.2% in October and above the 40-60 strategy since inception. This is Inflation Guard. We can see that if you bought into Inflation Guard at 100, right now Inflation Guard is about 99. Throughout this very difficult time, it's still holding on relatively well. So that means the strategy has been up by 1.5% as of the 7th of November. So let's take a deeper look into the performance in October. Here's Inflation Guard, and the strategy was 0.3% lower than the 40-60, which was 2.5. As equity did well in October, the strategy slightly underperformed the 40-60 portfolio during that time. All right, so now let's look at all weather strategy, which was up 0.8% for the month of October. And here we underweight equity and we have 25% in each asset class: equity, bonds, commodities, and gold. We make no changes in this revision or in this performance review. And let's look at it. We're up 0.8% in October and above the 60-40 strategy since inception for the all weather strategy. And since inception, the strategy was 6% above a 60-40% portfolio, 60% equity, 40% bonds as of the 7th of November. Now let's take a deeper look into that performance. Here we can see AWS, but it was worse than the benchmark, right? We were 2.7% below the benchmark, though we were still positive. So let's review our 25% allocations. Commodities 25%, bonds 25%, gold 25%, and also we have stocks at 25%. The strategies has lost less on 9 out of the 10 worst days. So here we show those worst days, and AWS, the red bar, is down less. A key feature of the strategy is that it aims to lose less when equity markets fall. Of the 10 worst days of global equity, the strategy has lost less than 60-40 on 90% of those days. And here we can see that we underperform. You can see this in the chart. The AWS portfolio is the red one. And for the month of October, we were up, but we weren't up as high as the 60-40. So in 26 out of 44 months, the strategy has beaten a typical 60-40 portfolio. Now let's talk about alpha focus. Equity is at 63% and gold is at 20%. We made no changes to the strategy at this point. Now the strategy is up 2.9% in October, slightly above the 60-40 portfolio since inception. So since inception, the strategy was at 0.2% above the 60-40 portfolio as of the 7th of November, 2022. Of course, the strategy is still done better than if you had just allocated your money to world equity. Since inception, the strategy was 8.4% above world equity as of 7th of November. Let's take a deeper look here. We can see there we have alpha focus. And what we can see is that the benchmark is the blue bar, the 60-40. And the strategy was 3% below world equity. And as world equity rebounded, our bigger tilts to world healthcare, world infrastructure, bonds, and gold were a drag on the performance. So let's look at the future for equity. Oil price has retreated. That's the green line in this chart, but not yet inflation. Inflation continues to stay high. Oil is a key energy source for agricultural, manufacturing, transportation, and others. And oil has fallen back, which could lead to a slowing of inflation. I did a video a couple of weeks ago talking about inflation, and what I would say, my conclusion from that video is that U.S. inflation is not going to accelerate at this point unless oil prices start to rise. But otherwise, U.S. inflation is probably going to remain flat for the next, I don't know, 6 to 12 months, because we can see slowly adjustments happening in the owner's equivalent rent. And that's a big item. And so that is driving part of CPI. So now inflation, as I say, is through the roof. Here we have the calculation of world inflation. That is right here with the U.S. 10-year treasury bond right following it. which it is doing very closely. Higher prices at some point reduce demand, and a higher base is also likely to reduce the inflation rate. Hence, inflation could be close to a peak even without central bank intervention. So here we can see a chart of the three-month government bond yield, which has risen to 3.8% from 1.4% a year ago. And this is basically a tightening of monetary condition. Still, global inflation has raced up significantly more. So expect central banks to continue raising rates, as they haven't yet stifled inflation. So Fed is committed to break the back of inflation. Jay Powell is still saying he's willing to bring pain on the people to get inflation down. This is what he said. Data since our last meeting suggests that the ultimate level of interest rates will be higher than expected. The Fed is going to take into account the cumulative thinking. Many interpreted that last statement as Jay Powell hinting we could see smaller rate hikes ahead. Now, the market expects inflation to return somewhat to normal. We can see that inflation expectations over the next 10 years did spike at that point, but now they've fallen and started to rise again. But generally, what you can say is that right now we're talking about roughly 2.5% inflation, which I think is what people are pricing into the bond markets, right? The 10-year break-even inflation in the U.S. is at 2.5%. So the market expects the Fed to get inflation under control. If inflation expectations are too low, equity, commodities, and gold could get a boost. So let's take a look at US CPI here. We can see that it appears to be peaking. I mean, one of the things you can see from this chart is it's not a long time when CPI is risen relative to the past. It only lasts for a short amount of time. And so what we had here was a very short amount of time, and now it's kind of come back to normal. Now, moving towards normal. Of course, it's not normal to have inflation so high. Now, if there's no significant oil price move from here, it could be the peak for US CPI. But the feed through of high oil prices could keep food and everything else high, meaning no extreme fall in the US CPI over the next few months. I expect that what's going to happen is that we're going to see that inflation is just going to stay flat for a couple of months in America, and then it's going to start to fall. Now, a December Fed rate hike is priced in. The market is pricing in 100% certainty of another Fed rate hike at the FOMC meeting. The implied probability of 61.5% for a 0.5% hike to a target of 4.25 to 4.5 for 38% of the people surveyed. Now, this is the fastest rate hike cycle by the Fed since the 1980s. Here, what we can see is that we start with the first increase being time one, basically. So time zero, we've rebased to zero, and then we can see one increase, two increase, three increase, four increase. These are the various increases that have happened with the Fed funds rate. But the thing that's significant about this chart is that if we go down to about 8 months, we'll see that no Fed has gone up so fast and so aggressively. And that can cause massive problems in the US and around the world. In the 2004 cycle, the target rate was hiked by 4.25% in total. And in the current cycle, the Fed has hiked by 3.75. Now, what's the problem with this chart? You can't see the absolute number or the absolute interest rate. And so I'm going to show you that in the next chart. The market expects a 4.25% rate increase by December 2022 and a new record by February of 2023. But here's a chart I'm just working on, and so I decided to throw it in here to talk about it. But basically, rather than talk about rebasing everything to zero, why don't we just show the actual increase over time? And so what we can see is the Fed funds increase. Let's take February 1972. At that time, the interest rate was about 3%, and it went all the way up to about 13%. But what's interesting about Thailand is that, okay, these kind of are a low inflation regime generally after 2008. And And what we can see is the black line is the actual increase of the Fed funds rate in America. And then I show where the analysts are predicting that it's going to end, which is this line right here. And within 15 months, it's possible that it could end up at that spot. Now, the effective rate hasn't risen to 3% this fast since the 1950s. This is the effective funds rate, the market rate ultimately. And since March, market expectations have shifted to a much more aggressive Fed. When that line moves from the dotted line up to the straight line with no dots, that is a major tightening basically at the Fed, where they are trying to get the interest rates to rise. So the market expects the target rate peaks in June of 2023. The Fed is aggressively tackling inflation, which causes the risk of brings the risk of causing a recession. So before I go further, I just want to talk about that for a second, that basically what I've said in the past is that Biden is raising interest rates and the Fed is raising interest rates into a recession. I still believe that's true. And I would say that the Fed is causing a recession right now. Are you prepared? Are people prepared? I would say people probably aren't that prepared for that. So now let's go back and look at another chart, which is the Fed is expected to be the most aggressive of the different banks out there. And you can see the Fed is the red line. The Bank of England is a dotted line. But this is part of the reason why the English pound has been strong relative to the dollar, because they have been increasing interest rates and they have been holding those interest rates high. And basically, this gives you a picture of that. The expected lower rates in the EU and Japan lead us to expect a weak euro and yen against the dollar. Now, let's talk about yield curve inversion. And we can see it diving deeper. All recessions in the US since 1970 were preceded by an inverted yield curve. The average time from inversion until the recession started was about 1 year. We have a pretty significant inversion right there. Now watch if the yield on the U.S. bonds, this is the high spread, the high yield spread. So the risky bonds yielding minus the government bond rate. So if you had a risky bond at 10% and you had a government rate at 4%, the spread would be 10 minus 4 or 6%. And I'm just watching because we know the Fed intervened into the market in March of 2022. And now what we see is that the spread starts to rise. I think that this is where a potential blowout could happen, like an unexpected event could cause this item to race up. So a wider high yield spread shows investors are demanding higher returns to bear the risk of a high yield company. EU has hit a similar level to that reached during the COVID crash, while the US is still below and has been falling. America could pull out of this without too much trouble. Now, valuations have come down primarily due to price falls, because if you look at the blue line here, you can see that the net profit margin basically is at an all-time high at about 11%. It went down a bit, but we're not seeing an earnings collapse particularly, because what these are is forward net profit margin and forward PE applied across the whole report. And so the result is right now, we still have profit margins pretty high at companies, but I expect that's going to fall, and that's going to also bring with it the PE ratio. So world stocks valuation is now slightly below its long-term average. And that's pretty amazing. If you think about it, the long-term average, the long-term average, I lost my pointer. Okay, here we are. The long-term average is about 15% PE, at least over this time from 2008 until October of 2022. And what we can see is that right now it is slightly below that long-term average. So if we look at global stocks, the adjustment has been made. So while the consensus net margin has come down a bit, there seems to be more significant downgrades coming. And this is why I think with the US, we still have some downside. And consensus still expects earnings growth. Here we can see that analysts are expecting 1 year ahead earnings growth of about 7%, 2 year ahead earnings growth in the US of about 7.5%, let's say, and then 3 years gets all the way up to 9.5%. So that's a pretty optimistic, good times, right? Analysts expect 7% 1 year ahead earnings growth in the US and for earnings to accelerate from there. So let's look at Europe. Now, this is an exceptional item. So whenever you're looking at data that looks this strange, I would cut it down. And let's just say that, you know, it's probably right here, but it's a rebound from losses. And from that, we can see that expectations for 2 years ahead is that EPS is going to fall. And then eventually it's going to come down to stabilize here in 3 years ahead at about 6% EPS growth. And if we look at other countries and regions, we can see pretty much a similar thing, except what we see is more recovery here in emerging markets and more recovery here in APAC, ex-Japan, so Asia Pacific, excluding Japan, and especially worrisome for US stocks. Why is it worrisome? Because I think that analysts are probably going to have to start downgrading their expectations here. Note that analysts are overly optimistic and they fail to foresee market turns. Now, the ECB has slowed down rates, right? Inflation reached a new peak at 10.7% in October in the euro area. After another 0.75% in October, ECB indicated that they'll be less aggressive in December. However, the problem is that if the Fed stays aggressive and ECB doesn't follow, the euro could weaken further and exacerbate their trade deficit. If the euro weakens, it means that people living in the euro space can't buy as much with the money that they have, and that causes imported inflation. Now, there hasn't been much QT. We can see the Fed's total assets on their balance sheet. It's just come down a little bit. It's not a big deleveraging. Many central banks have let bonds mature, which has led to little change in their balance sheets. Bank of Japan's balance sheet grew slightly in October. Now, we think the course will eventually be reversed, right? Many central banks are communicating that they're going to get inflation down, and investors seem to buy that rhetoric. We still think central banks and politicians will change course and return to accommodative policies as soon as something breaks. And we do think central bankers are going to break things like the bond market. Stagflation is the worst possible outcome. If central banks manage to kill growth but not inflation, we have stagflation. High inflation, low growth. Stagflation is typically bad for both stocks and bonds. Commodities have typically done well during inflationary times, and gold has historically fared well during stagflation. We see opportunities to allocate to specific sectors and markets within equity. But overall, equities are likely to suffer from aggressive rate hikes and withdrawn liquidity. Despite that, for Alpha Focus and Inflation Guard, we see opportunities to allocate to defensive sectors like healthcare and infrastructure. We also think U.S. equity can remain strong in relative terms. Let's look at bonds. Now, bonds are typically a safe place to be, even though 2022 has been exceptionally bad. In recessions, safer assets like government bonds are typically going to perform well. Though with high inflation, low yields could still lead to negative real returns. So you can lose money in those bonds. Now, in Alpha Focus and All Weather Strategy, we don't allocate to bonds to speculate on the upside, but rather to use it as a way to protect capital over time. Let's look at commodities. Now, while the European natural gas price has returned to June 2001 level, oil remains relatively high. So the European natural gas price has normalized as storage has been filled up and the weather has been mild. The market expects natural gas prices to bounce back, though. And I would say, looking at that chart, we're probably heading into a rebound or a bounce back. So Europe's Russian energy dependence can still influence energy markets. If the weather gets colder in Europe, gas storage can quickly deplete and prices will rise again. So there's fundamental support for energy prices, right? OPEC keeps missing its output targets, and the cartel has announced to cut production and support the oil price. Ukraine war could lead to further supply shocks, and energy prices can also remain high due to the past underinvestment in new projects. And supply for agricultural products could tighten further. Besides energy, Russia is an exporter of many industrial metals, and Russia and Ukraine are both important exporters of soft commodities. La Nina could reduce the supply of important commodities like corn, soybean, and wheat. This is a weather pattern that tends to disrupt the growing. And here we can see high energy prices are feeding through to food and cereal. Now, good news is that meat has been falling, which we can see the recent fall, but we are seeing cereals starting to rise again. Natural gas is used in fertilizer. Pricier fertilizer means higher grain price. And as natural gas price has fallen, fertilizer plants may restart production. Corn is a common feedstock for and for poultry and livestock in general. So that's driving up prices. So world food price index hit a record 160 in March 2022, still at 136 in October 2022. So a extreme rise, a slight fall, but maintaining that position. Export bans on food could exacerbate food shortages and push prices further. Oils and cereals have been the primary reasons for the falls, and meat and dairy are still around March 2022 levels. What about commodities? Well, demand for necessities like food and energy, inflation, and supply chain disruptions related to the ongoing Ukraine war, or even not related to maybe COVID and other things, keep commodity prices high. A reopening of China could lead to increased demand for commodities. Also, if we were to go into a stagflationary period, commodities could show resilience. Let's look at gold. We keep gold as an insurance, and the war in Ukraine spurs uncertainty, and inflation expectations could rise, making gold attractive. In fact, that small fall that you see there is okay with us. We'd rather it go up, but the fact is we're trying to protect the wealth. Though expected rate hikes are negative, in general, gold protects value in market downturns. So what are the risks? Global recession pushing down stocks. Central banks, aggressive rate hikes, and QT crash the markets. Collapsing energy prices would be damaging since we have exposure through our allocations to world energy and commodities. We're mainly exposed to Thai bonds, hence the Bank of Thailand's actions impact us the most, not the Fed. All right, what are the key takeaways? Central bankers appear to be raising rates into a recession to stifle inflation, but stagflation could be the worst outcome. Demand for necessities like food and energy inflation and supply chain disruptions can drive commodities higher. We see opportunities to allocate to specific sectors and markets within equity, bonds, and golds to protect capital. So what are the risks? Monetary tightening crashes markets, collapsing energy prices, and Bank of Thailand actions. Remember, the Valuation Masterclass Bootcamp 6 is currently in week number 5. There are the students studying hard in our weekly or practically daily live sessions. Bootcamp number 7 starts in January 9th of 2023, and our limited super early bird price is now available. And with the phenomena in the discount code, you can save another $100. So you get an extra $100 off on any price point. Currently, you save $800 with that. So if you're interested in that, just go to click the link that's in the chat or scan this particular barcode. Remember to use phenomena as your coupon code. All right, it's time for questions. And I think we're going to kick off here. Hold on. So let's go through the first question. I'm just going to go down the list. So here's the first one. Utana says, between Vietnam and China, which one would you invest in this month for a 3-year period? That's a tough question with everything that's going on right now with Vietnam, you know, but I would say I would probably pick China over a 3-year period because there is going to come a time that the Chinese market is going to come back. So that's what I would say to this. Next question from Yosuran says, do you expect the global inflation will decline soon? So far, do you believe hawkish monetary policy will cope with inflation? Yeah, I think that basically the only question here is what happens to oil. If oil shoots up, then we are going to have inflation. And so there's not a lot you can do to get over that. So I would say if oil is flat, I think we'll our inflation will rise a bit and stay stable as the increase in oil price and energy prices basically feeds through into, you know, different products. So I would say that, you know, it takes time for those things to feed through into service products and also into real estate and the like. So we probably have some situation where the Fed just can't bring down inflation yet, but eventually they'll probably crash the market and crash the economy. Okay, another question from Yosaran says, what are the sectors or themes that are favorable after the U.S. midterms, guessing where Republican is a majority? Yeah, I definitely think that Republicans will be a majority. And I think that the first thing they're going to look at is energy. And they're going to go after trying to open up the energy industry and get the energy companies starting to produce more and not punish them. So I would say that that is probably the first sector. And we're already kind of seeing that. First of all, oil price has fallen because I believe people are anticipating the Republicans win and that they loosen up on the oil or energy policy. But so I would say that that's one of them that I would be interested in. And as far as Republicans are concerned, I would say that unfortunately, Republicans are a lot like Democrats on a lot of things, particularly war. And so I would say defense contractors are probably making a ton of money from the war in Ukraine. And that may be a place to go if your ESG investing allows you to go there. How will the U.S. Fed go after the midterm elections? What sectors will the new Congress drive U.S. economy? I think the Fed will try to raise interest rates and continue until they can say, we did the best we could. We raised those rates when it was time. And so I would say that that's kind of what's happening with the Fed, that they're really raising rates hard. And I think it is going to hurt the Democrats in the election, and they'll probably blame Chairman Powell on that. He can come back and say, my job is to raise rates when inflation is high. So he did his job. All right, next question from Anucha. Given the Republicans gain more seats, will there be any changes in the Fed direction? I think that they're going to leave Chairman Powell in position. And so I don't see a major change in Fed direction, even when the Republicans come in to power, which I think that they will. Yosaran says, so it proves that monetary policy works as inflation is expected to go down soon. Well, don't forget, actually, a good way to look at that answer to that question, I'm just going to show you a chart. Okay, hold on. Let me find that chart. 1 second. Let's take a look at this chart, and then we'll see what we can see. Hold on. So one of the questions you have to ask is, was it monetary policy or was it oil prices? We can see a massive rise in oil prices that happened over this period of time from 2020 roughly all the way up till where we can see it right here, where it got up to, in this case, the price of about 1,600, and then it started to come back down. So I would argue that most of the inflation actually came from energy, and some of that energy prices are coming down. So I would say that it wasn't so much the Fed as it was what's happening with energy prices. Pia Watt says, what's your view about world debt or U.S. money supply chain debt will increase in bubble? Yeah, I think that it will become a bubble. And at some point, the U.S. dollar will collapse. It could be next month. It could be next year. Or it could be 5 years from now. One of the benefits that America has that most countries don't have, like let's say Thailand as an example, if Thailand was started to print a lot of money like America's done, basically the free market is going to knock down the value of the Thai baht. And then government's going to be punished for that. But with the U.S. government having control of the financial system, they don't see such punishments. All right. Absolute says, if I want to regularly buy global bond funds every quarter or so for the next 10 years, as well as for my balanced portfolio, can I expect to get a return of about 3%. Yeah, I would say 3% per year. I mean, we've actually set a target return of 4% per year. But yes, I would say you could potentially get that. All right. And next one is happy life. What is the signal for alpha focus rebalancing? Well, it's a good point. And the point is that we don't use signals so much. What we do is every 3 months, we revisit it. And when we revisit it, if it no longer looks attractive, we get out of it. If it looks attractive, we get into it. So that's how we do that rebalancing. Remember, for those that want to join the Valuation Masterclass, we're really excited to get the next one going. We're aiming for 100 people. So would be nice to see you there. All right. Salaya DC says, if China ends zero COVID policy early next year, will the global economy be stronger than the forecast? I think it's possible that that if that happens, that we will see that that the economy in China is going to speed up. And so that's going to impact demand for commodities, and commodities should rise. So that's what I would say. And it could be stronger than forecasts. Also, remember, our next revision for the portfolios for all strategies is going to be announced on early December. So we're about a month away from our next rebalancing. So at that point, we're going to provide you with some different information. All right. So Peter Pan says, you suggest hedge or non-hedge the gold fund? I would say that I wouldn't necessarily hedge the gold fund, because what I think is going to happen is the US dollar is going to fall eventually. And when it does, gold's going to rise. And you want to, you know, so if the US dollar falls, now right now, having a hedged position when the US dollar was strengthening was kind of painful. But if you have a hedged position and the US dollar falls, then you're in a better position. So it depends on what you think is going to happen to the US dollar. But generally, right now, because the US dollar is so strong, I would feel more comfortable to be hedged, right? And also remember that our gold funds are hedged. UOB that we use in the AWS and AWIG is partially hedged. But from a performance, it seems like most of it is hedged. So many of the fund management companies say that they would allow hedging up to a certain range. But we expect that most of them are probably almost all hedged. All right. Well, that was a lot of great questions. If you've got any more questions, now is the time to ask them. I just want to take a moment to thank everybody for tuning in. I know that you're busy. You've got a lot of things to do. And you've decided to take the time to listen to me talk about the markets. And I appreciate that. So feel free to ask any final questions. And if there are no final questions, I want to thank you again for joining all 175 that I see on the YouTube channel. And hopefully you have a good day ahead and a good Loi Kotong. I know many people, maybe they already floated. I put some water in my bathtub so I can float my Kotong there. So I'm going to do that. But I want to thank everybody for coming in. Anucha, you are very much welcome. Have a great Loi Kotong the rest of the evening and have a great week ahead. And I'll see you again in about a month. And that'll be the time that we'll be rebalancing all of our strategies and re-looking at them. Thank you everybody for joining and great questions. Keep it up. I'll see you soon.
บริการที่ปรึกษาการลงทุนส่วนตัวจากฟิโนมีนาจะช่วยให้คุณสามารถจัดการการลงทุนจากคำแนะนำของมืออาชีพด้านการลงทุนที่คอยดูแลและปรับพอร์ตการลงทุนของคุณให้เป็นไปตามเป้าหมายสนใจรับบริการที่ปรึกษาการลงทุนส่วนตัวสมัครได้ที่ fino.me/phenomena-exclusive หรือ line@phenomenaport คำเตือนผู้ลงทุนควรทำความเข้าใจลักษณะสินค้าเงื่อนไขผลตอบแทนและความเสี่ยงก่อนตัดสินใจลงทุน